We haven't certainly processed all the materials, we're still in the process of creating material. And the slides I have are from the first 2 weeks. My wife goes to me about the slides which came out on Sunday. So we have slides for the first 2 weeks, and thus what I will show you, the sites I will show you, will be ones that we picked up during the first 2 weeks of work. And what we have here on the coffee table are a number of the lithics that we picked up, some of the best ones, and these are some of the lithics that Brian Bird in the back is now illustrating for some of the lithic materials that we will publish eventually. And over on the coffee table, you likely didn't notice, but I was working there when some of you came in. What we have are the maps that we use in the field. And so we've been in the field for 3 years, and most of the sites that we have found, except for the earliest ones, that is the 79th season, they are not on those maps because they go on 1 to 50,000 scale maps, and I don't have that map available right now. So we've been in the field for 3 years. First of all, in the fall of 1979, we spent the first 6 weeks. Then we came back in the spring of 1981 last year. And this year, in May 2nd, we spent 6 more weeks in the field. So we have completed 3 years of 6 week seasons down along the south bank of the Wadi El Hasa. Now, the Wadi El Hasa is one of the major wadis in southern Jordan, and it runs in a northeasterly direction. And if you go on the road from, say, Amman to Aqaba, you pass a small village called El Hasa. And right in that village, or cutting that village, is the Wadi El Hasa. And that's about the eastern extremity of the wadi, and it flows in a northeasterly direction and empties at Sati, which is just at the southern end of the Dead Sea. Now, what we've been doing for 3 years, we started on the western edge of the plateau, that is close to the Arabah, southern Dead Sea, and we worked our way from the western edge of the plateau in 3 years along the Wadi El Hasa towards the east, and we finished close to the desert highway. The first year, we did an area of approximately 110 square kilometers, which brought us from the western edge of the plateau eastward towards the Wadi Laban. And again, if you take the King's Highway by Karak down to Tequila, you pass through the Wadi El Hasa and you follow the Wadi Laban up towards the plateau and then down into the field. So for the first year, we were working in the area west of the Wadi Laban King's Highway Road towards the Arabah. The second season, we worked from the Wadi Laban towards another wadi called the Wadi El Ali, and you'll see some of the slides of the Wadi El Ali tonight. And then this year, we began the Wadi El Ali and worked towards the Desert Highway. We didn't get exactly towards the Desert Highway because as you get close to the Desert Highway, close to the Khalid El Hasa or the Turkish fort in that area, what you have is just a lot of gravel pit operation. You have a flood plain, and what we would pick up there wouldn't be of great interest. So in 3 seasons then, we've surveyed an area of approximately 300 square kilometers. This year, we did a smaller area, approximately 68 square kilometers, but we did it in a much more intensive fashion than we did in the previous two territorial segments of the survey. So the northern boundary for the survey is the waters in the Wadi El Hasa. And there is water in the Wadi El Hasa. It doesn't stay in the Wadi long because of the down in the ground, but we were surprised this year at the amount of water that was in the Wadi. So the northern boundary is the waters of the Wadi El Hasa, and we made our way towards the south, sometimes as much as 10 to 12 kilometers, sometimes just 6 or 8, and then as we got further towards the east, we just went about 2 kilometers south off the Khalid or the Turkish fort. Now, what we did this year as far as surveying, we decided that we would spend 15 days doing a systematic random survey of this area of approximately 68 square kilometers. So we divided the territory, or we had 2 stratified areas, the gorge areas, and then the more easily accessible areas. And we chose equal number of square kilometers in those 2 stratified areas on a random basis. So we did that for 15 days, and then we looked at our maps to see what we had, and we saw that there were areas that we didn't touch at all as far as surveying went. So we spent the rest of the season filling in those holes. So if you just wanted to take our systematic random survey in the first 3 weeks, then you could work on that, and that would give you a good representation of the sites in the area. We were interested also in locating as many archaeological sites in the area as possible, so we filled in the holes by doing a purposeful sampling of the territory that we had not chosen randomly, or the squares we had not chosen randomly. The first season, 1979, we picked up 214 sites. Second season, we were getting a little better. We picked up 338. And this season, we got even better. We picked up 522. So we have now, over 3 years, 1,074 archaeological sites in the area. We have, where possible, we have picked up artifacts. You see some of them, some of the lithics here on the table. We picked up lithics, ceramics, pottery, glass. One chap was especially good at beads this year, some pieces of bracelet, and we even got several coins. So we tried to pick up as many artifactual remains and surface as possible, and we use these artifacts and remains in order to date the sites. So we locate the sites, and we try to date the sites on the basis of the architectural and the artifactual materials which are on the surface. We plot each site as accurately as possible on our 1 to 25,000 scale maps, and there on the table, and you can see that the sites are all numbered from 1 to 1,074. And we describe the sites, photograph the sites. We also do an inventory of all the sites that we have now. We rate the sites on the basis of 1 to 100. And some of the sites come out rating about 5, but some get a rating of 70, 75, or 80, depending upon the person who does the rating. But what we want to do is make an inventory of some of the sites. Really has to do with no relative inventory rating at all. But what we want to do is we want to say to certain people who publish, these are the sites which we think are the best sites in the area. They ought to be excavated either because they have good architectural, good archaeological remains there, or if they're not excavated for long, they're going to be destroyed. And our experience over the 3 years is that we find certain sites one season, they're good candidates for excavation, and we come back next season and they're destroyed. So even in a period of 2 or 3 years, we have seen the archaeological sites we have found destroyed by road activity, by erosion, or by some other means. So we, after we do our work, we want to say to the public, well, these are some of the sites that we think ought to be excavated, and here's where they are, here is what we think of them, this is our description, some of our photographs, and this is these are some of the materials that we have put up on the site. So these are some of the objectives then to identify the sites in the area, to try to give a chronological dating to the sites on the basis of architecture, on the basis of building ceramics, coins, so on and so forth, to describe, photograph the sites, and hopefully when we write a final report, we'll be able to say something about, at least in a preliminary fashion, what is the archaeological prehistory and history of the area that we have surveyed. And certainly for a survey, you're not going to give the final archaeological prehistory and history of the area. At least we can say this is, on the basis of what we have found, a preliminary archaeological history, history of projects, of the area. And that's what we're calling at the present time. So we are presently analyzing the materials from the present season, and once we finish our green report for this season, we will try to do a final report, which will try to get together all the materials and perhaps answer some questions or raise at least some problems that we did not raise in our reports. So I think that's enough for introduction, and so as we go along, just remember that we are a bit limited, because the slides that we have are just some of the sites, and so I'll mention them as we go along. So perhaps we can start in chronological fashion. So we start off with the most important element of the survey, and that is the team members. And this is the group, with the exception of myself, and the members of the team, starting with the oldest, going down the list. This is Nabil Degain, who was the Department of Antiquities representative in Kirak. And then you have, Cesare's not here, so I'll put him second, Cesare Benigle, who is Canadian from Brock University in Ontario. He had to leave week to follow the season for the survey in Italy. Then many of you know Ted Banning, who is presently working at GRASH. Brian Bird, who is opening the lunch, and he was wont to do that more often than most of the rest of us. And the youngest member in the picture is Gary Rollison, who is there in the corner. So these are the members, and I said we did the area more intensively than ever before, and actually we had almost double the team, and certainly we had much more experience as we went along. Pretty well last year, Gary and I did most of the survey work, but this year we were aided by two other very capable individuals. And so when you have almost a double team, you certainly can do a lot more work. So we did a more systematic and a much more intensive type of survey this year. The previous 2 years, we were housed in Tefila, but this year we had to move over on the desert highway to Al-Hassa, which is a village. And I thought that all these villages would be stocked with electricity, so before the season began, I even bought some of this umatilla in order to destroy the mosquitoes in the area. I got down there, no electricity, but the accommodations weren't too bad. But these are the team members at work. What we did in the afternoon, we spent 6 to 8 hours in the field, and then in the afternoon, we washed all the materials, marked the materials, analyzed as much of the material as possible. So when we came out of the field, actually, we had most of the drudgery work done, because we had materials washed, marked all our lithium insurance in the field, and we had most of the material analyzed. And here you see some of the material that has been analyzed on our site sheets. So we're in fairly good shape as far as getting down to ready when we move forward. Just another shot off here, what the group is doing on marking the lithics and shirts in this particular slide. And the final member, a member that didn't come in the field, but a member who's known to a lot of the people who work in archaeology here in Jordan, is Abu Arif, who is here, lives here in Amman. And he was with us as cook for 3 years, and he's presently with the Lejeune project down in Karak, working on that Roman fort excavation. So these are the team members for the 1982 season. Now, the territory that we did, this is the north bank of the Wadi El Hassa, and we began our work this year in the Wadi El Ali. So we began on the western side of the Wadi El Ali, and we worked in this wadi first of all. Following that, we moved up onto the plateau, a plateau which separates this Wadi El Ali from the Wadi Akbar, but just a few more spots to the Wadi El Ali. This is another shot. There's you really can't see the water here, but there's a surprising amount of water, and there's a waterfall in that particular, I think you see the waterfall right here, waterfall in that area in the Wadi El Ali. This is another shot of some of the vegetation in the Wadi El Ali, and this shot is looking towards the south. The other two shots were looking towards the north. And this is the final shot of the Wadi El Ali. So you get some idea of the terrain in which we were working. This is the site I will mention later on. It's site 616, and it's an important site because used for various periods, and like the fortress or watchtower, which has a very good view of everything that goes on in the Wadi El Ali, what goes on to the west and also to the north on the Morbite Plateau, which is here in the north.
So moving towards the east, this is part of the plateau region between the Wadi al-Ali and the Wadi Akmar, and this is a huge wadi which makes its way also down towards the Wadi al-Hassa. And here is another shot of the Wadi Akmar, the way it turns around, and this is the Wadi al-Hassa up here. So these are wadis running, for the most part, north-south, meeting the Wadi al-Hassa, which is running in a northeasterly direction. Continuing towards the east, we work over here. This is the Wadi Erwehi, another wadi which we surveyed. And finally, this is the Wadi al-Hassa. And it's surprising because when you see some of the desert conditions in the region, that there would be that much vegetation. But here is the water, which is some of the water which is in the Wadi al-Hassa. And that was during the second week of our survey season. And we, if you remember, we did have quite a bit of rain, so much rain that we did get very, very badly stuck with the Land Cruiser in the Wadi al-Hassa in early May. Another shot of the Wadi al-Hassa vegetation. These fields now are fields where the farmers grow tomatoes and like the eggplant and squash. So some of the Wadi al-Hassa. And finally, towards the east, this is going towards the east. You see the Wadi Erwehi joining the Wadi al-Hassa here. This is the castle, or the Ottoman Turkish castle, which is very close to Desert Highway, which can be seen from Desert Highway as you make your way down towards Ma'an and towards Aqaba. And finally, again, this is a shot off the Wadi al-Hassa here, and I think that's shot, and that's it. So that's again some more water in the Wadi al-Hassa, and this is perhaps a better shot of the castle, and the Desert Highway would be out here. This would be the phosphate mine which is right on the Desert Highway. So that was in general the terrain in which we worked. So we worked in a number of different wadis. We worked on the ridges and the plateaus between those wadis, and of course we worked all along the southern bank of the Wadi al-Hassa here. And later on, I don't have a slide off the Turkish road. The Turkish road, I think you could just see it right here, and the bridge is still intact somewhat there, which we come from the Ottoman period. Now, starting out with some of the earliest materials that we have, according to Gary, who is our lithic analyst, aided by Brian, some of the earliest materials we have are at least half a million years old and perhaps a little older. Last year we were saying we had some materials which were half a million years old, and this year we're saying that perhaps we have materials which are even a bit older. Now, the camels have nothing to do with the site, but this is actually the terrain in which we found a large number of those lower Paleolithic axes. This is just a herd of camels here, perhaps 150 or so. Two team members here, Brian is here, and Gary will be over further east. But in this area here, we found some of our oldest materials way up in the plateau, which is between the Wadi Akmar and the Wadi Erwehi. Continuing down towards the Wadi al-Hassa and going from the lower Paleolithic down to the middle Paleolithic, some of the best Lavalwa sites that we found were located on those terraces which are going down towards the Wadi al-Hassa. So we have some materials, and some of the materials are on the table here, which come from the New Paleolithic dating from approximately 90,000 BC to around 35,000 BC. Now, you look at these and you think that they're just sand dunes, but as you walk those sand dunes, these pieces of lithic materials are certainly eroding out. And almost anywhere you walk in the survey area, you find some lithic materials. Of course, we're talking about half a million years of habitation, but there certainly is a great deal of evidence in the territory for human habitation in an area now which is almost desolate, or almost devoid of any habitation whatsoever. So certainly there are indications that the environment or the climate now is rather different than it was, say, 100,000 years ago, or even 35 or 25,000 years ago. So these are a number of our sites here which are, or which gave us some Balboa material, middle painted material. Yes?
Was that the area of 6620?
Exactly.
You might say that
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, there was there's a Gaw there now, which comes right up to the castle, and perhaps a bit further northwest of the castle. And all around that edge of the Gaw, there are Biblical sites. And as Gary is saying, there is good evidence that this was a huge lake in antiquity. And I think the material continues down to the Baron, but the Epipaleolithic. So the lake was likely still there as long ago as what? Even 10,000 years ago. So this is a great change. And as some of us were saying, just to go around the shores of where that lake used to be, one would likely pick up a tremendous amount of lithic materials from many, many different periods. So if someone's looking for a survey project in the prehistoric period, there's a good area down close to Jessica Highway. Now, this shot was taken for a different purpose. I won't tell you for what purpose, but another Levallois site, site 634, is close to this rock shelter. I was interested in the waterfall here, but there is a rock shelter up here later on in the back, and took better slides off it. And Brian found a number of very, very lovely Levallois lays, mysterious materials at this particular rock shelter. So another place where you could find that type of material. Now, one of the, I think, greatest moments for Gary this year was to find the Tufian site. And where you see this material here, with this is all eroded material here. And all along in this type of terrain, you have some beautiful Tufian material. And Gary had a number of sites that he was going to test or put trenches down before he found this one, and now this one is rated number one. So this is a Natufian site from the Epipaleolithic or the Mesolithic area, and I'll show you some of the materials. So this is some of the materials which is eroding up. This is covered with Natufian material. So this is just one area where you can see that material coming up. And in the next slide, you can see the robbers counting the spoils. Here they are with great glee, making a separation off the different types of Natufian materials that they found at the site. And later on, Gary went back and did some more exploration of this site, and he found another Natufian material site a bit to the northwest. So there is some Natufian material certainly down in this area. Allison Betts have found Tufi material out in the eastern desert, and now we certainly have it in the southern Jordan. In this particular area here, now I think Brian and Gary will recognize this, but this is the plateau between the Wadi El Ali and the Wadi Akbar. And this plateau is almost covered with lithic materials. We really had a very difficult time separating one lithic site from another. So what we did, we tied the lithic samples into architectural remains, towers, tombs, so on and so forth, that we found on this plateau. But this plateau is almost covered with lithic materials from almost all the periods that we found. And it's just amazing when you walk and you really find a very difficult time separating one lithic site from another. And you see the Wadi El Hasa here, and the Wadi El Ali is down here. So we spent a couple of days in this area, and there are plenty of lithic materials from many different regions or areas. And probably what people were doing were returning to this over and over again. Now, so I mentioned some of the different prehistoric periods, the lithic materials that we have, and now I'm coming down to talk about the pottery materials. And now I'm not suggesting that this is in any way associated with the pottery Neolithic, but we do have two definite pottery Neolithic ceramic sites this year. And one of them is this site 870, which is just overlooking the Wadi El Hasa. The Wadi El Hasa will be here to the north. And the ceramic material from this site was exclusively pottery Neolithic. And there was one other site which we had the same type of material. This is another site, again, it's close to the Wadi Al Ali down here, the Wadi Al Hasan, here they can see it here. But this, whatever it was, it's certainly not a natural stone formation. It's a stone pile, maybe a tomb. We really don't know what it was, but at this site as well, pottery was exclusive pottery in the Libyan. And as I'm going to say later on, we're going to see that the early pottery that we have is almost exclusively in one area of the entire survey of the region. Now, this is an interesting site. You saw this site before when I mentioned the Wadi Al Ali, and there was a site way up. This is a tower, watchtower, or fortress of some kind. It's just given the name Castle by the locals in the area. It's our site 616, and this has calcolithic material at it. And again, I'm not suggesting that calcolithic people were responsible for this, because there is Nabataean and there is some iron tube pottery at this site. But nevertheless, we do find in the area, and it's quite close to the site I just mentioned previously, we find calcolithic period in an area which is close to the sites where we find the pottery as well. Now, this is another, I don't know what it is, it's some sort of a rectangular structure. You can see some of the stones here. And of course, a lot of the structures that we find, we don't know if they're towers or tombs, some of the rectangular structures, what purpose they served in antiquity. But this site, again, it's just on the ridge east of Wadi Al Ali. And if you know, this is El Aina, which is the village north of Wadi Al Hasan. You make your way down the King's Highway. This site had calcolithic pottery as well. And some of our lithics, calcolithic lithics and the early bronze lithics are not well known. So we had a category which is called late, and that spans the time from the end of the Upper Paleolithic to down to the end of the early bronze. And we do find, along with the calcolithic pottery, a lot of this late lithic material. So likely a lot of our late lithic material fits into either calcolithic or the early bronze period. This is another site which has calcolithic early bronze material, and again, it's on the ridge overlooking the Wadi Al Ali, and most of our early bronze calcolithic material comes from that just one area. There are two areas where we find early bronze. We find it in this area on the eastern ridge of the Wadi Al Ali, and then further to the northeast along the Wadi Al Hasan, we find early bronze. But the calcolithic material and the pottery Neolithic material is almost exclusively on the eastern ridge overlooking the Wadi Al Ali. And that is very, very interesting, and I don't know the reason for it. I don't have a slide of one of our calcolithic early bronze sites, but it consists of three circles, each circle getting smaller with a stone pile in the center, and the pottery from those circles was exclusively calcolithic and early bronze. I think there were 15 calcolithic and 9 early bronze shirts. And again, it's in that one specific area, and we're just wondering what was going on that plateau during the calcolithic early bronze period. This is just the same site, it's just a post-op off that. And it's very difficult to say that these belong to the early bronze and calcolithic period, but that seems to be the dominant or predominant pottery at the site. At first, I thought a lot of those would pertain to the Iron II period and then to the Nabataean period, but we're not getting the associated pottery. We're getting pottery which comes from much earlier date. And so I think we're going to have to look at all those sites very, very closely and see whether or not we continue to get the same type of pottery at the same type of sites, and maybe we can say something about those sites later on, still a bit further than that. Okay, this is another early bronze site, and again, it's in the same general area. This is the Wadi Akmar this time. This is that same plateau between the Wadi Akmar and the Wadi Al Ali, and again, an early bronze site. So early bronze is almost exclusively to this. Calcolithic is exclusively this area. There is some early bronze further to the northeast along the bend in the Wadi Al Hasan. And again, that seems to be a pocket of early bronze material. Why they're just in those two areas, I really don't know. Okay, so continuing now, we finished the early bronze, and to say about the early bronze, what we have is the earliest part of the early bronze. We don't seem to have any early bronze 2, 3, and certainly no early bronze 4. We did have some early bronze 4 in the previous season, but we don't have any early bronze 4 whatsoever. So we have some material from the earliest part of the early bronze, and then we do not have anything until the Iron Age. There's no evidence at all in the area of any middle bronze that is between approximately 1950 and 1550, and again, no evidence for late bronze occupation of the area. So sometime during the early bronze period, something happened in the area because there's no evidence at all of any ceramic material, or there's no evidence of anything that we can date to a period of over 1,000 years, maybe even longer. So what was happening in the area, or what happened in the area, which caused complete lack of any habitation in the area. In the Negev, to the west, there is middle bronze, and there is some late bronze. We don't have any of that. Dr. Bill Deaver said you ought to have it, but we certainly don't have it in the area. So now we're down to the Iron Age. Now, the Iron Age, in previous two seasons, we had quite a number of sites. But as we get further to the east, this is the only major village site which we are now dating Iron Age. Jim read the pottery from this. He says it's Iron Age, possibly Iron One, but there were not enough indicator sherds to really convince him that it was indeed Iron Age One or around 1200 BC. But this seems to be the eastern So this is that same site, 6604, an Iron Age site. This is likely the remnants of some type of olive press. You see it's in very bad shape at the time. And this is just one of the walls. But again, when you look at most of these stone sites, there's no evidence at all that that's a ridge. It might be just something that a shepherd or a veteran collected recently. So this would be just some of the architecture. Whether or not it's as old as Iron Age, it's very difficult to say. So that would possibly be Iron One, certainly in the Iron Two period. Now this site is just to the north of the 604, which would be right up here. This is site 647, and we think that this might be an Iron Two fortress. It's the predominant pottery at this site, which is just on the western side of the Wadi El Ali, is Iron Two, and in most of the wadis we've surveyed to the western part of the period, we found small Iron Age Two fortresses, and this possibly fits into that pattern, but there's nothing for these steps as far as this is goes. And this is just a close-up shot of Gary, just right here, and this is some of the remains of that Iron Two site along the western side of the Wadi El Ali. Now, continuing over and leaving the Iron Age and forgetting about the Persian period between 539 and around 332 BC, the next period from which we have any evidence is the Hellenistic period. And this year was a surprising year for Hellenistic pottery in the area. When Jim read the pottery at first, he said he was very, very surprised that it would be Hellenistic pottery that far south and that far east. But we found at that site 604, we found 75 sherds, which come from either the Hellenistic or the late Hellenistic period. And then at this site, site 680, this is the Wadi El Hasa here, the Wadi El Ali is down in there. At this site, we found only 15 sherds, and all those sherds are Hellenistic sherds. So we found more Hellenistic sherds this season than we found in the previous two seasons put together. And again, it seems strange that we do not have Hellenistic sherds on the western side of the territory, but we do have them in the area off the Wadi El Ali. We have some more Hellenistic sherds which are associated with Roman and Nabataean sites.
But popular sites in this area, close to the Waddy Valley, which have very little or no value carbon, have this Pelinus deposit. And so that's something which is quite new for us, to have so much Pelinus deposit, when in previous 2 years, most we would ever have would be that 7 or 8, or even 10 shares we could definitely say in history. But at one site, we had 7 or 5. Maybe that's the end of that. Just a few more slides. Let's start with So, finishing with the Hellenistic period around 332 BC, we now come to the Nabataean period, and the Nabataean period is the best period represented in the period. But that's not surprising because the Nabataean period had the most sites in the previous two seasons as well. The Nabataean period is the best representative of all archaeological periods in the area. This is a very large Nabataean fortress called Eruwehi, and it's just Wadi al-Has is just on the other side of the hill. Wadi Eruwehi is here. It's sort of a V shape. This is the western wall here, the southern wall coming along here, and then the northern wall here to the tower up in here. And this is all rubble, stone rubble in here. It's a very huge Nabataean fortress just up where the Wadi Eruwehi meets the Wadi al-Has. This would be part of the southern wall coming down here, the interior of the site, which is here, and the western wall here. And another shot off that western wall with the interior in here. And close by, there is this cemetery, which has the same type of pottery as the site. The cemetery is looted, almost completely destroyed. And so here is the cemetery, which is associated with that Nabataean site of Eruwehi. So you can see that this is really nothing less for archaeologists together. So another Nabataean site, this is really not a good slide. I really couldn't get to a good point to get a shot from this. But this is site 620, which is the Nabataean caravanserai, which is just several kilometers to the southwest of Eruwehi. And at this site, pottery is almost exclusively Nabataean, and also we found alabaster at this particular site, and we even found the alabaster quarry, which is approximately 5 kilometers further to the southwest. So I think we have both alabaster at the site, as well as the place in which they took the alabaster. So the Nabataean period is the best period represented in the area. And now, we're going to cheat a little, but you'll permit me to cheat with this slide. As we were surveying one morning, way up here, this is the Moabite Plateau. This is part of the Edomite Plateau to the south. We were surveying in our area, and we looked across the Wadi al-Hasa, and we feasted our eyes on this huge site here. You see the wall, which is coming along here, and then it cuts up here. This is a natural outcrop here. This wall, the western wall here, goes along, and you see some of the remains up on top, and the wall continuing here. And then in the next site, in the next slide, this is like your modern paddock. Now, you can see some of the remains of structures in this slide, which are on this slope here. And there are some more structures up in here, and this would be a tower way up here on the northern extremity of the site. Now, the pottery from this site, which is along the northern bank of the Wadi al-Hasa, it's mostly Nabataean or Roman. When we were surveying the Via Nova, or the Roman wall built by Trajan, most of our pottery, you can't tell at times whether it's Nabataean or Roman. And same type of reading come up at this site. We also have a late Roman at this site. We have also late and early Byzantine. So this, I think, is a Roman camp of some kind. It fits in very well with the Limas Arabicus, the a line of fortresses which begins up in Basra, continues down to Unal-Jamal, to Rajun, down near Karak, and continues down to Udra, and then to Aqaba. This fortress is right on that line, if you look at it on a map. And so it's a site which has never been discovered before by anyone. And I think it's a very important site. It's certainly not the same architectural type of site that you have at Rajun, but I think Francois said that there is a site which is similar to that on the road from Barak El-Mir down into the valley and then continue up to Jerusalem. And Bert de Vries tells me that there is another site of that type close to Mount Nebo. You can walk from Heshbon down toward Mount Nebo, and another site off that spot. So a very huge golden camp, possibly if it wasn't associated with the Venus at the same time that von Walker was talking about in the show, but it is a huge site known throughout this season. There was a great deal of Roman remains in the area, and now I'm looking at this site here, which is Rujum Thakur, which is on that plateau I talked about before between the Wadi al-Ali and the Wadi Akmar. Nelson Wick, who surveyed in the area in the 1930s, said that this was an Edomite fortress, and he said that he picked up early Edomite pottery. And so this was one of his northern Edomite fortresses along the south bank of the Wadi al-Hassa. Well, we looked at his other fortress to the west. Another fortress we talked about was that Eru Lehi I mentioned before, which is exclusively Mesopotamian, and there are no Iron Age Sherds there at all. There are no Iron Age Sherds here either. The predominant type of pottery is Ottoman. I don't think the Ottoman people built it, but the next most predominant type of pottery is Great Roman to Byzantine. And now I'm wondering, this is placed almost equally or equidistant between the Roman fortress out here that we just saw and the Via Nova, which is further to the west. And I'm just wondering whether or not it was some sort of signal station or communication station between that Roman legionary camp and the Via Nova, which is further to the west. Possibly, I don't think at all it had anything to do with Edomites. I don't think it dates the Iron Age at all. You know, there is Iron Age down in the Wadi to the west, but there is Iron Age pottery there. But this year, as well as that area of the doesn't have any Iron Age here whatsoever. It's Mesopotamian, Roman, or Persian. Okay, this is just another shot of that. It's still standing about 3 to 4 meters high, and likely even higher in antiquity. And a close-up off the southeast corner of that site. It likely was even in better shape when Nelson Wick surveyed. Okay, now getting to the Byzantine period, the sherds from this site were predominantly Byzantine. I really don't know what the site is. It's very close to Eru Lehi. It's on the south bank of the Wadi al-Hassa. There's an arch there, a number of arches. This is mud brick. Pottery, as I said before, is predominantly Byzantine, so we really don't know what the site is. There are a number of Byzantine sites in the area. No Byzantine villages, but that's not surprising because we didn't find any Byzantine villages last year. We found lots of Byzantine villages the first season in the agricultural and western segment of the territory. We do find Byzantine sherds, along with Mesopotamian, of course, and Roman sherds, and this one here may be Byzantine, I don't know. But what's interesting about Byzantine sites, we found two quarries. Found another quarry, which, according to some of the people, was an Abitine quarry, but the only type of sherds that we found there were Byzantine sherds as well. So it's difficult to know what some of the sites are. So what this was, or what it is, I don't know. And this might be a robbery trench of some kind, some of the people can find out what it is. Okay, this is just a shot of that site, and you see the caliph here. I don't have any slides of the Islamic materials in the area, and up until the Ottoman period, there's really hardly any material. During the Ayyubid Mamluk period, where we have, in the western segment, we have four good village sites, 79 season, which are from the early Islamic period, we don't have any Ayyubid Mamluk sites this year. And I think the reason for that was that the road was through to the west, close to the King's Highway. And then the Ottoman Turks moved the road
over towards the desert in order to avoid some of the deep wadis, in order to avoid some of the wadis on the way towards Mecca during the pilgrimage. And of course, this is the Kaaba del Hasa, or the Turkish fort, close to the desert highway. And close to here, there is the ridge, and then there's a piece of the Turkish road. Some people say that that road is Roman, but it's certainly a very different construction than the Roman road that we surveyed last year. It's much larger, much wider, and it seems to be a different construction. So I think there is some debate as to whether or not it is a Roman road. I would think the Romans were in that area because there's certainly Roman fathers in that area. But I don't think that road here was built by Romans, likely built by the Ottoman Turks. And then we have a lot of sites which we don't know anything about as far as dating goes. These are some terracing in the Wadi of Ali. And I was told a couple of days ago that in the Negev, some of these terraces date to the Iron Tomb. Well, if these terraces are from Iron Tomb, then it would fit in with the Iron Tomb site 604. That's just to the south of this particular terracing. Some more of the terracing in the Wadi El Alawi. This is all eroded now, and I'm sure in antiquity there was much more soil and much more possibilities of farming on this slope than at the present time. It would be impossible to make farming in this area. And we do have a great deal of terracing, and terracing is very, very difficult to take. A lot of our terracing we have Ottoman pottery, but I don't think those terracing are meant to do Ottoman. Might be a little better than that if you're going to the area, camping certain areas, and needing their part. So a lot of terracing, and that again creates a problem for us as far as dealing with these sites is concerned. Everywhere we have stone enclosures. No matter where you go, you find a stone enclosure. Vincent Clark was doing a survey with Tom Parker on the Bajun project. Is convinced they're religious, of religious significance, and they all belong to the early Bronze period. I think myself they might be Paddocks. I don't know to what date they come from. We find we really can't find one specific type of lithic or ceramic material which comes from this. But we find them everywhere. This is one of them here, and I'll give you another one. But we have many more than two. This is one here. This could be modern bit here. This is close to that Petruchian site 695 that you saw before, the Wadi El Hasa here. So another enclosure. But we have many, many of those enclosures that have been in all possible environments, and there's really no consistent type of artifactual material that comes from them, and we really don't know about what to do. Yeah, near the end of the survey, we found an enclosure, I think, which was 240 meters in diameter. It's the largest one we've ever found. Very close to the Turkish wall and to the castle. It's, I think, 2 or 3 kilometers to the southwest of the castle. The biggest stone enclosure we've ever seen. We got four different samples from the site, and I think it was four different pots. I think that's really what it was, because all the pottery in each sample was homogeneous. I think there's four different pots. And the pottery was pottery we've never seen before. I think it might be all modern in the sense of Ottoman to Ottoman period. But just a huge enclosure, whatever they used, was 240 meters in diameter, wherever. No. Well, most of the ones that we're looking at are perhaps 27, 20, even some of them smaller than that as far as goes. And then, of course, we have all those, we call them sometimes towers, we call them sometimes tombs, we call them sometimes rectangular structures. But you have these everywhere. And again, there's not a great deal of consistency as far as lithic or Sumerian materials go in helping create these structures. A large number of objects. And then we have fences. We have fences that, I don't know what fences are for, but we have lots of these fences. This is one here, which is going from that site you just saw, I think it's site 681, and then it's continuing down the hill, and you can see it making its way down here. And in some places we have one structure here and a fence of this kind, some stone standing on end, making its way towards another structure. Perhaps it was indeed for dividing territory from one group to another. We don't know. Keeping animals in, it's hard to know. We do have a number of fences in the area, and it's difficult to know exactly what purpose it served. And as far as digging the fences go, it's another problem. So, if anyone has any questions, either Gary, Ryan, Lance, or
no, please play it, not questions. If you want to make a comment, Gary, do you want to add anything to that? What the general information about the living materials?
Well, I think, in one sense, it's at least compared to last year, it's a successful season. The earlier things are so maybe we look at the top row of artifacts in the pocket there, a series of very crude tools. And they, although I always say that they're probably earlier than half a million years, so we may in fact be able to material from York Valley, which is quarters of a million years ago. In terms of the secret sites, there's undisturbed or sites that still have material left where they were deposited. Again, this is the most successful secret of all three. Some of the villages, like the site of the village, is the only Egyptian village that is undisturbed in Jordan. Associated with that village is a cemetery, which would be the only Egyptian cemetery. Up on the Highland Plateau, which is completely material over in Palestine. So, this year we're on a tremendous new chapter in the encyclopedia about the world. It's not just for one or two, there is an entire range. It's three quarters of half a million years, all the way up to about
another thing I think you mentioned before is that a lot of those sites have many periods represented. It seems that people are coming back to those sites time and time again over very, very long period of time. And if they were there, the environment had to be very, very different than this place. Because there's really nothing there. The people who are out there, a few camels, and very few goats and sheep over there. So it's impossible to know that people were there with their tools. And even fishing in one of those. Very efficient.
Yeah, but neither of you were there. It seems that from some of your earlier slides, the two witches compared to what you show seem to have been fairly high on the plateau. And I was wondering if there is any correspondence in the environment talking to those kinds of might be doing
I think it probably is. The material from the earlier period that we've gotten a lot of views for certain dwellings and the possibility we would see the conditions account for the present circumstances. We truly understand that good. On the other hand, the density that there are nothing like for extreme. So, most of our material comes from this material for all the 90,000 years from the succeeding period, the 90,000 to 5,000 years, is found all over the place. It's rampant in the water, it's rampant on top of the water, and it seems to sites both in and above the water. That very much is a concern. Hard to beat for that part of that time. Suggests to me there's a hunting area where people can live for a very long period of time
during the year, this then suddenly changes with the upper comparison on the water. It looks like at this stage, it has a lot of change in the determining, or at least limiting the way people do it.
Further west you get, the more numerous the animals become. Yes. Like the small villages, you have to use them for the small villages. And I think I can add in relation to that so called Edomite Potter, which Crystal Bennett found at Taliban and at Lucero. And also, they found a fellow at Ravenry down in the We don't have that. I think we have 3 Edomite Sherds this year. And I think in the previous 2 years we've had about the same number. And I talked to Manfred Weiber, a German scholar, about them. He thinks that Lucera Edomite ware is really a talisman. It's not the type of ware in China that the people in the big capital use. It's not the, and the China that we have here is not. It's not what the people always in kind of small villages. So if we do have iron material, iron age material, Jim says it's quite close to Palestinian type of iron age material. And he sees the relationship also between the Sahar material, which is some relation to what has somehow located outside of that. So we do have iron age 1, exactly when it starts, very, very difficult to say. It's probably to see, but can you do that precise? We just know there's really nothing before the Iron Age is built. But 604 is the last Iron Age study in that comparison. We find 2 years after that, that's all. That's really the eastern extremity of the Iron Age too. And I'm just wondering whether or not Nelson Bigley extended those Edomite fortresses to looking back on the plateau and then very late, way over the east. I wonder whether or not it was he was looking for a whole line of the Edomite fortress along the northern bank of the Radio Hassel, the northern extremity of the Edomite plateau. I'm very skeptical. I think there were fortresses, but iron 2, I don't think there were iron 1 at all. I think all we have is iron 1, small villages, and then we have a number of good sites. One this year, that was 7 most of these 4. In all previous seasons, we have small fortress ranges, which they're not, they don't compare to that Roman legionary camp and the Nabataean fortress that are ranging, not near the size or the magnitude of this. So, a lot of interest.
How much has it been passed down to Saracen?
Yeah, we find a lot of Tyrosin, and Brian found one set of conical slide in its defense, and I decided there's a wadi coming down towards the Wadi Al Ali. We found sort of a circular fence coming to meet it, and it seemed that it had something to do with water diversion and water catching of some kind. And there are a lot of aqueducts too, but in the Wadi Al Ali, these aqueducts are still being used today. And we find different, so we don't know how old those aqueducts really are. But I would think that if they were farming in that Wadi Al Ali, that even in the early Bronze period, even though the early Bronze people might have lived up on the top of the plateau, they could have been farming down in the Wadi itself. And they, if they were farming, they would have to use some sort of irrigation system. So very difficult to say just how far back those irrigation ditches did. Certainly that water diversion one, the Rhine survey, it's certainly something that we haven't done anywhere else compared to the water. It seems to have something to do with water diversion or catchment.
And I think a couple of other sites I noticed on the site sheets were people that call it the dam site. So that's. So, thank you very much. Please come up and look at our materials. We'd be disappointed if you didn't. And if you want to look at the maps, they're open to the table. Have a conference.